Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedar Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
You're not gonna leave me alone, are you?
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
The Grand Poobah, the Big Kahuna.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Percy Sledge. He tells the story that as a young boy, literally picking cotton in the cotton fields in Alabama, the other folks in the field with him used to say, "Percy, that voice of yours is going to make you famous." And he'd say, "I'm just a kid in the cotton field picking cotton with you. How's that going to be possible?" But in a parallel universe, while he's growing up in that field, a sharecropper's son who happens to be white, named Rick Hall, is about to create, literally 100 yards away from that field, a recording studio, literally in the middle of nowhere, with no background in it, but tapping into the African-American population in the South, and will change the musical world forever. It's a magical moment. We'll get into Rune Arledge and Pete Rozelle bringing Howard Cosell to sports for a magical moment in sound in sports. And it's all inspired because my guest at 7:15, and you can listen to the podcast if you want to hear the interview, is an amazing company based in Santa Barbara. Jared Abrams tracked him down. The company's called Sonos. My guest, Alan Mask. So exciting right now in 2020. Wireless technology, Bluetooth, digital sound. No scratching of the needle on the record anymore. Although some people actually still like that. But it's a revolution to be able to hold that phone in your hand and type in Percy Sledge and up comes this music that sounds perfect. Well, it's innovators like the folks at Sonos that make that responsible. So the world of art, the world of sports, the world of surgery to me, those worlds I live in that I'm passionate about, they're all the same. So that's today's topic. This magical revolution in sound. Let's hear Muscle Shoals, the word magic being used by Bono from U2. Number one.
Magic is the word that comes to mind for me when I think of Muscle Shoals. It's about alchemy. It's about turning metal, the iron in the ground, the rust into gold. You just have to listen and you will be transported. You will be changed. You're going to hear some of the greatest voices that ever were.
One, two, three.
That's Bono all the way in Ireland. Across the ocean, hearing the sound from Muscle Shoals. Well, across the ocean in England in the 60s, who else is paying attention but the Beatles and the Rolling Stones? Let's hear Keith Richards talking about hearing that sound coming out of that little studio in the backwoods of Alabama. Number two.
To hear the sound coming out, there was an amazing feel, kind of magnetic, I suppose, in a way, sound-wise. And then after a while, this word, Muscle Shoals, comes into the picture, and you put two and two together, and that was when I said, if we get the chance, we got to go down there, you know.
And it started by a man named Rick Hall, the sharecropper's son. All in the span of a few months, his wife, his brand new wife, dies in a car accident. He was driving the car. His mom had left him when he was a baby. His father's raising him, living in a place with no plumbing, in the middle of the woods. He's got nothing. But one day, he decides to turn his life around. Let's listen to number five.
All of this gravitated towards, what am I going to do the rest of my life? And I decided to come back to Muscle Shoals. But this time I came back with a vengeance. I came back with a determination that I was going to kick some ass, take some names. And I was going to make it in the music business. And so I set up shop in a little candy and tobacco warehouse. I closed the doors. I hid my car. I didn't talk to girls. I didn't make dates. I didn't do anything except write songs. And I was totally obsessed with the business.
Let's listen to number six.
Now, you got to realize Rick Hall is this older man. We're all 18, 19 years old. And Rick's what, 28, 29?
29.
He had the vision for the recording. Rick made records with a group of teenage kids, okay, that became hit records, world-class records.
You asked me to give up the hand of a girl I love.
But the first song he makes is Steal Away with Jimmy Hughes. Let's go to number three.
The first record I cut in this studio was a record called Steal Away by Jimmy Hughes, brand new building. And I was hoping it had the magic. I didn't know. So I brought my band in, and I went up in the control room and sat down.
Okay, all set.
I turned on the microphones and nervously hit the talkback button to the musicians and said, with a slight crackle in my voice, rolling.
One, two, three, four.
When they kicked off Steal Away, I sat behind the console and wept.
Number four.
I just had huge chill bumps come up on my arms, and the hair on my back of my neck actually stood up. And of course, this was the birth of the Muscle Shoals sound.
I've got to see you somehow. Not tomorrow.
Rick Hall tells stories about being colorblind, tapping into the African-American music to help shape and create rhythm and blues through this tiny little recording studio. And then they take a break and go to lunch and go to the diner in town where this is in the 60s, early 60s in Alabama. A white guy ain't walking into a diner with a bunch of black guys. So he's fighting a battle. The revolution is really bringing black artists to the white recording studio. Let's go to number seven.
Thank you very much. We're going to do our slow
this
one
is Mick
now.
Jagger, called, Rolling
Stones. You better move on.
It was the only thing we did like that. I mean, the girls really adored this song. It was a big hit for us in England. It was like a number one record.
It comes from Rick Hall, Muscle Shoals.
I think the Beatles beat us to Arthur Alexander by like a couple of weeks. You know, they cut Anna, and I think we cut Better Move On maybe a month later. It was a love of Arthur Alexander.
Number eight.
The groove that we set up came from rhythm and blues music. I remember when Paul Simon called Stax Records, talked to Al Bell, and said, hey, man, I want those same black players that played on I'll Take You There. He said, that can happen, but these guys are mighty pale.
A lot of people could not believe that my whole band was white guys that played behind me.
People have arrived at Muscle Shoals expecting to meet these black dudes, and they're a bunch of white guys that look like they worked in the supermarket around the corner.
The songs written by the white guys, the high school kids in the band making that funky sound, bunch of white guys, but the singers were black. He did it, Rick Hall. This is hilarious. Listen to the very first time he's meeting Wilson Pickett at the airport in Alabama, and Wilson Pickett does not know that who he's about to meet is this white cracker, Rick Hall. Let's do number nine.
I met Wilson Pickett, picked him up at the airport. He looked like, to me, a dangerous man.
He walked up like he'd known me for 500 years. Hey, Wilson, come on, we're going to cut some fucking records. Boy, we're going to really cut some records. Come on, Wilson. Come on. I said, wait, I'm nervous, you know what I mean? Now, what does white man know about producing a Wilson Pickett?
And on the way to the studio, I'd look at him and he'd look at me, and I could see it in his eyes. He was thinking, what am I doing with this cracker down here in Alabama?
Okay, number 10.
Coming to Muscle Shoals was the turning point.
That's Aretha Franklin.
I recorded I Never Loved a Man, which became my first million-selling record. So absolutely, it was a milestone and the turning point in my career.
We use the word magical, what Rick Hall did in music. The same word magical is used by George Plimpton, the great journalist, to describe what Rune Arledge brought to ABC Sports for the very first time in 1970. Monday Night Football came to primetime, no longer a football game on Sunday. The genius behind it was three announcers in the booth, most notably the New York lawyer, Howard Cosell. Listen to George Plimpton talk about the magical experience of hearing sports with Howard Cosell, Don Meredith, and Frank Gifford. Number 10, Monday Night Football.
People tuned in to hear what Howard was going to say, or how he was going to get on Frank, and what witticism, what Texas bit of whimsy would come out of Meredith's mouth, so that it was an extra quality that had been, was added to the game. Entertainment reared its head far more than it did on Sunday. It was a brilliant idea, and it was magical. Monday night suddenly became Monday Night In.
Listen to Howard yelling at a bunch of journalists about what you're hearing is someone different, irreverent, calling a game. I'm a New York lawyer, but it's my show now. The revolution is on. Let's listen to number 7.
But in fact, you're writing about us. How many of you look to your own papers? Have sports writers who are still writing, Monday Night Football's a disaster. Whom are they in touch with? Whom are they writing for?
Well, the good thing about Monday Night Football was that the announcers became bigger than the show. I think people turned on Monday Night Football to see and hear what Meredith, Cosell, and Gifford were going to say, especially Meredith and especially Cosell. But with these guys and the personalities that they had, and they were so different, absolutely one was different from the other, I really believe that the three announcers didn't like each other at all.
That was Chet Forty, the director, talking about it. All right, let's go to the beginning. How did it get started? Let's go to distant replay number 4. This is Pete Rozelle.
Actually, we had somewhat of a track record because we had experimented on 5 primetime games with CBS for various nights of the week earlier in the 60s. And we were convinced that we'd go. And we talked to CBS, and they said, you know what, move Doris Day? And they had Carol Burnett that night. You know, the NBC had 29 movies. So then I talked to them and made a case of these 5 previous primetime games had done well. And he was obviously very interested, and I knew he would have to do a selling job on the network, perhaps.
Number 5. This is Rune Arledge, the head of ABC.
We figured that we would lose something like 100 of our stations who would carry the football games independently, which would have wiped us out on Monday night. And so it was really fear more than anything else that is the way I got the network to agree to it.
Back in 69, when we were negotiating this, we had a provision in the contract that ABC had to guarantee that every game would be shown in color, because it wasn't necessarily automatic in those days.
Talk about the early days. Black and white versus color. Incredible. All right, let's go to the beginning and how this idea that Rune Arledge and Pete Rozelle of bringing three announcers in the booth, and one of them being Howard Cosell, who is not trained to be a professional sports announcer, but he was really responsible for revolutionizing the sound that we hear and what football is nowadays. Who's bigger in football than Chris Berman? I don't know, but Chris Berman is actually giving credit to the craft that he learned from Howard Cosell. So let's go to number one, Chris Berman.
Who would have guessed back in 1970 that it was a big gamble putting NFL football on primetime television? I mean, Monday Night Football was a part of our culture. Just think back, what a great night TV was. Ronan Martin's laughing from 8 to 9, then Monday Night Football with Dandy Don and the gang from 9 o'clock on. Was it that long ago that Joe Willie and the Jets were beaten in that opening Monday night game in Cleveland?
And now you're going to hear what Howard Cosell sounded like during halftime, during the doing the replays. Let's listen to that, number two.
We pick up in the third quarter, 10-7, the Cardinals leading. Wilson handing off on that draw to Rogers. Watch him bust that tackle, and he's on his way. That handoff to Eddie Lee Ivory, and look at number 40 go, and what a day he had. 109 yards on 17 rushes.
6-3 Rams, first quarter. Lions ball, Billy Sims, 20. Watch him, remember the number, you know the name. Touchdown!
Third play from scrimmage, number 82, Alan Page, the counselor at law, banging the ball out of Kenny's hand.
Now listen to Chris Berman. Literally, what do they say? Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Listen to Chris Berman imitating Howard Cosell, giving him the credit. Number three.
You remember because you were there. We all were there for Howard's halftime highlights, weren't we? He did so many wondrous things in his career, broadcasting through the years. But I'll tell you, that was as good as it got. A lot of what I do on primetime, responsible for the way Howard Cosell did those highlights, and we thank him.
And the greatest who ever did it, Pat Summerall from CBS Sports, he remembers how they tried Monday Night Football at CBS, but they weren't going to give up on Gunsmoke. This was a risk, believe it or not, at the time for ABC and Rune Arledge. Let's listen to number four.
Well, the earliest Monday Night Football games were actually on CBS as an experiment. Bob Wood was then the president of the network, and Pete Rozelle tried to convince Bob Wood that CBS should do Monday Night Football. And Wood's argument was, we have Gunsmoke on Monday night. We have I Love Lucy on Monday night. We're the number one network. Why should we make a change and take a gamble on professional football? And Rozelle really, really tried his best to get CBS to carry Monday Night Football. Well, they turned thumbs down, and that's how ABC got involved.
And number five.
Mired in third place with soggy soap operas and insipid comedy.
ABC Sports.
ABC's Rune Arledge figured the network had nothing to lose and struck a deal for the Monday night package. The next task was to put together a broadcast crew.
Arrogant, pompous, obnoxious, vain, cruel, persecuting, distasteful, verbose, a show-off. There's no question that I'm all of those things.
And finally, number six.
Next, ABC paired the polysyllabic New York lawyer with the homespun humor of Texas twanging Don Meredith.
And I think it was the fact that you had the Don, who was totally outrageous and disrespectful. And he wasn't nearly as much so as people thought he was, but he was just a good old down-home boy that could, he could say, "Oh, Howard," and America thought he was wonderful.
And if you don't think the players played harder because they were now on primetime, you're kidding yourself. The iconic running back from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Franco Harris. Let's listen, number eight.
The games were a rating smash and a big hit with the players as well.
Personally, I loved Monday Night Football. And like to me, it was always a little bit more special. There's no doubt about it. just because of that, that this is your night and everybody's tuned in to you. They can't go watch another game. If they want to watch football, this is it. So, like, it's time to make sure that we're at our best.
Monday Night Football changed America's viewing habits and became a national phenomenon.
It was a revolution, a magical moment in sound in the world of sports, just like Muscle Shoals and Rick Hall, a visionary in music, Sonos in the world of making a speaker for your house using wireless technology. And for me in surgery, learning from my teacher, Dr. Ranawat, how to use my hearing, the sound, the magical changes in tone when I work on bone with my tools. What a great topic today. Coming up next, I'll take your calls. The clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. And I also want to take you into surgery this week, an ACL and a knee meniscus that I did, and explain what I found and why and what you can do as a weekend warrior to prevent it. And don't forget, we got to talk about that hot dog and chocolate. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
He's infectious, and I can say that because I'm a doctor.
Start your weekend off right, listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
Roberto Clapperio.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, it's Monday night, a new week has begun. I turn on my TV for some pigskin fun. I see a
Super Bowl. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Hank Williams Jr., remember when he took over the reins of making the soundbite for Monday Night Football? Just think about it. Combining country music with sports. And we got a lot of credit to give to Steve Sable from NFL Films, who actually combined opera and the symphony and poetry. The Autumn Wind, remember that with the Raiders? The whole combination of sports and art, we have to give credit to Ed Sable, who started NFL Films, being smart enough to hire his son, Steve Sable, to marry those two worlds for us. And I got to say, probably nobody influenced my life more than Steve Sable because of how he combined those worlds, a true Renaissance man. Other than just filming the brutality, the violence of football, by slowing down the tape and having violins and a symphony orchestra from USC making music, slowing down the game so that it looked like ballet. This was the genius of Steve Sable. And all those years later, to think that Hank Williams would be the right person to do the sound for the football game. I just love it. I just love it. Combining those worlds, it's just so much fun. All right, this week, I had the opportunity to eat the same thing for dinner four nights in a row. And that's because I went to Smart and Final. And they're not paying me to say this. Going up and down the aisles. And then I came across the hot dog area of Smart and Final. They had all kinds of varieties there. But all of a sudden, my eyes made contact with a certain brand of hot dog that I hadn't eaten since I was a kid growing up in New York. Because I actually used to go from Queens, Far Rockaway, and drove to Brooklyn, to Coney Island, literally just to have a Nathan's hot dog. I don't know how they make it. It's beef. I get it. But I don't know what they put. But it's like, oh my God, you can buy Nathan's hot dogs in a package? Thank you. I bought a dozen hot dogs. Then I said to myself, if I were to devise the greatest hot dog bun. My mouth is watering already. It would not be a hot dog bun. You know what my favorite hot dog bun would be? A challah. That's C-H-A-L-L-A-H. Challah. That is an egg bread that you have Friday nights before the Sabbath. And the best egg bread in L.A. is at Ralph's, the supermarket. It comes from a bakery called Schwartz Bakery. Well, you make a big slice of that, you could roll up that big slice and make it into a hot dog bun. And what's the greatest mustard that you'll ever put in your mouth? It's a certain yellow deli mustard. And there's only one place you can get it. The deli called Uncle Bernie's in the Valley, in Encino. You don't have to get anything else. You can. It's great. But they sell a yellow deli mustard straight out of Far Rockaway. So I had the Nathan's hot dog on a slice of challah with the deli mustard. And every night I saw him out. What would I like to eat for dinner? And it came up the same damn thing 4 days in a row. If you want to live life like me, go to those three places, get those three ingredients, and make yourself in this pandemic one of the greatest things you'll ever put in your mouth. Oh my God. We'll have to talk about dessert and probably my favorite chocolate dessert. The babka is great. You know all about the chocolate babka from the delicious bakery, but I got something that comes close. It could be 1A and 1B. It could be Michael Jordan versus Kobe. But the best chocolate thing you can have with a cup of coffee at the end of the meal, it's called a chocolate chip strip. And coming up next, I'm going to tell you where the bakery is that you can get this dessert that will be a religious experience for you. I'll take your calls. The clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
What's going on, LA? This is Kobe Bryant.
When I see the food, I eat it. Bada boom.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
I'm on a light diet. I only eat when it's light out. Bada boom.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
You asked me to give up the hand of a girl I love.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors.
You tell
That's Arthur Alexander.
Where they are.
He's recording that at Muscle Shoals Studio in Alabama with Rick Hall. Just for fun, Rebecca, let's listen to the Rolling Stones singing that song by Arthur Alexander. Let's go to Muscle Shoals number 7.
Thank you very much. We're going to do our slow one now. It's called You Better Move On.
It was the only thing we did like that. And the girls really adored this song. It was a big hit for us in England. It was like the number one record.
You asked me to give up the hand of
That's Mick Jagger.
I think the Beatles beat us to Arthur Alexander by like a couple of weeks. You know, they cut Anna, and I think we cut Better Move On maybe a month later. It was a love of Arthur Alexander.
Yep, a love for Arthur Alexander. Fantastic to go back in time and figure out how all these dots connected. Super impressive. All right, let's take some calls. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Teresa. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Well, doctor, I'm be bitten by mosquitoes, and I was wondering if there's something I can take to, you know, make them not like me or whatever. Mm. Or
you could go online, Teresa.
I don't have any way to go online. I could just get somebody.
Okay. There's a company, Avon. Remember the perfume company?
Oh, yes.
Avon?
Uh-huh.
Well, they make a perfume called Skin So Soft. Avon.
Oh, mean, I remember
Skin So Soft. Well, you get your hands on some Avon Skin So Soft, and guess what? Those mosquitoes will go to your neighbors and bite them and ain't going to bite you anymore.
Thank you so much.
This is the first mosquito repellent call I've gotten in 10 years. I want to thank you, Teresa, so much for the call. Can I just ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you listen to the show often?
I'll tell you the truth. Guess who listens to it? My husband.
Who?
He doesn't miss a show because guess what? He loves Kobe Bryant.
And me too.
I don't want to talk too loud because he knows I'm calling, but you would have thought, seriously, doctor, he had lost his son.
Yeah.
He cried and cried, and he loved Kobe, and that's why he loves you, because you love Kobe.
Yep, and Kobe loved this show. That's why he did the promo for this show. And that's why you may not hear his voice anymore, except on this show. Because as long as I'm going to do this show, I'm going to keep playing him and his love for this show.
And that's what my husband told me. He told me just what you said. He said he's always going to have Kobe. Every other word's going to be about a Kobe. Kobe had a
Well, I'm going to get. How many years are you married, Teresa?
We've been married for 59 years.
So what's the secret to a 59-year marriage?
Don't do it again.
You know, Teresa, I had this.
We're at the point now, Doc, where we're the blind leading the blind.
What is your husband's name? What's his first name?
Herman.
Herlin.
Herman.
Okay.
Herman. Herman.
So I have in my office one day a very nice woman your age, and she's got bad arthritis. She can't walk, so she needs her knee replaced. And she's in my office, and her husband Herman is in the exam room with her. And I look at this couple, and I look at her and I go, Teresa, how many years are you married? And she says, 59 years. And I look at her and I say, Teresa, Herman, what's the secret to a long marriage? And Herman's sitting right there. He looks at me and right away he says, love. And then I look at Teresa and she looks at me and says, space.
You're right, doctor. You're exactly right.
What did you do for a living, Teresa?
Well, believe it or not, I worked 27 years for UPS.
Wow. Oh, my God.
I went to work. I had been a stay-at-home mom, and I went to work part-time with UPS, and you would have thought I had walked into a gold mine. I didn't know what to do with the money.
We had four children, and
we were in Catholic school, and we were on a budget, and so when I got the little part-time job, I had spent $10,000 in a week.
That's fantastic.
And I was able to go to work and get home with my kids, and they'd never known I was gone. And then I excelled as I stayed on the job. It was the best thing I ever did, doctor.
So how young are you now, Teresa?
I'm 79 and my husband's 82.
And when is your big 80th birthday?
My birthday, I just had a birthday in March. March 18th.
Oh, okay.
My husband, has a birthday coming up in October. He's going to be 83.
And what did he do for a living?
He was a tree trimmer. Well, he had a business.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic. Did he ever fall out of the tree and need someone like me, an orthopedic surgeon?
No, but I'll tell you, you know, there used to be, his name was Rick Dees. You know who Rick Dees is?
Yeah, sure.
And he used to do that. I would be going and hear him on the radio at work, and he would be saying stuff like they would play pranks on people, and then they had called this man at work and told him, said, you know, we're taking that tree out. We're having a horrible time. The man said, You're not taking my tree out. Get off of my property. He was going on and on and on. And it would make it be hysterical. You could hardly drive sometimes laughing at stuff like that.
What a beautiful life and a beautiful person you are, Teresa. You get
well,
that.
Listen.
No wonder the mosquitoes love to bite you. You're like the
so
sweetest lady there is.
Well, you know what? I'm glad because I like the smell of Skin So Soft. And that'll
there
be
you
a
go.
Good thing.
See, isn't it great in life when you can make one move and you get two results? You're going to get two results. You're going to smell good and the mosquitoes will go bite your husband.
Well, you know what? You won't believe that they never bite him. Never.
That's right. That's
Isn't
right.
Something?
Yep, that's the mosquitoes have a brain all of their own. Well, I got to thank you,
it.
Teresa. You made my day to be able to tell you some advice so that you can now smell good and fight those mosquitoes with Avon Skin So Soft. Thanks so much for tuning in. And tell your husband, we are two brothers from another mother. We both love
Isn't
Kobe Bryant.
That's wonderful. I most certainly will tell. You have a blessed weekend, and take care.
Thank you. You too, young lady. Talk to you soon. Oh, what a beautiful call. All right, we'll take a break. We'll pay some bills. We'll come back. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN.
You're listening to the Weekend Warrior Show, presented by Cedars-Sinai on ESPN LA 710 and the ESPN app.
What's going on, L.A.? This is Kobe Bryant.
All right.
Start your weekend off right. Listening to the Weekend Warrior Show with Dr. Clapper.
I'm Big Clap.
Every Saturday morning from 7 to 9 a.m. on ESPN, 710, home of your Los Angeles Lakers.
Mustang Sally.
Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. It's Wilson Pickett. In the 60s at Muscle Shoals Studio, Fame Studio, with Rick Hall, changing the world, a revolution in sound. Awesome. All right, the number's 877-710-ESPN. Let's go to Randy. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hey, Dr. Clapper. I've had
morning.
Double knee replacement.
Okay, good.
And, 3 years ago, I've been sports guy my whole life, wore out all the parts. I've also had both shoulders replaced.
Good.
But the knees, it's been 3 years, and I've got the burning neuropathy in mostly the left knee, but both knees, and it drives me crazy. I can't sleep, wakes me up early in the morning. And I've done a lot of different things. I don't know if there's anything I can do to get rid of that burning sensation, especially after I do too much activity. I still like to get out and do sports.
And obviously I didn't do your surgery, correct?
Right.
Okay. This numbness and neuropathy happened after you had the surgery?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, neuropathy and the burning sensation, you certainly first want to make sure that the parts look like they're, you know, okay, that the bone is accepting them, and that there's nothing, God forbid, going on inside the joint itself. And
right.
It would certainly be helpful to get a second opinion so that you at least have another pair of eyes looking at the work that was done. I can go through 100 different things to be looking for, and it's not fair to go through them right now, but you need that kind of an evaluation because the neuropathy is kind of like the cough. It's a symptom when a person has pneumonia. You know what I mean? If you've got an infection in your lung, you need antibiotics to stop coughing, not Robitussin, if you know what I mean.
Right.
So
yes.
Before you start figuring out, should I do acupuncture? Should I do all kinds of neurologic things? You better ask the first question is there a pneumonia? In other words, is there something the matter with the implant and the bone and how it's sitting in there that's causing the symptom, that's causing the cough, or that's causing the numbness, the burning pain, the neuropathy that's taking place? You're not a diabetic, correct?
No, I'm not.
Okay, cool. How young are you?
Really, really good health other than that. I've had...
How old are you?
Second, I'm 70.
Okay, cool. All right. Let's assume that everything's kosher. Let's assume that the inside of the joint looks fantastic on the x-ray. And it's a pure neuropathy. My favorite thing to burn out the neuropathy from post-polio patients to diabetics to people with arthritis, all the folks who get neuropathy, is walking in a pool. Because the very fact that the skin is being touched by water and not air is almost like rubbing a blister, becoming a callus. It's a sensory overload, and it really rewires the way the nerves are working in a beautiful way. Right. Half an hour, belly button high water, you walk forwards, get to the end of the pool, walk backwards. This is in the shallow end. You walk forwards, you walk backwards, half an hour, 3 days a week. There's a book I wrote with Linda Huey called Heal Your Knees. Get a copy. That will help you immensely. The pool I love, the bike you're already doing, but I think specifically to go after neuropathy, and given that you're a guy who's already had both shoulders replaced, both knees replaced, I'm sure your spine is not terrific either. I hate spine surgery. You want to do everything you can to avoid it. Stay away from epidurals if you can, or any cortisone shot. This is a holistic, beautiful thing for you to do, is to get in the pool. Please do that. You ain't going to be better in 2 weeks. It's going to take probably 2-3 months. And then check back in with me if you want, Randy, okay?
I'd love to. I appreciate it, sir.
Okay, I want you to do me a favor, Randy. I just helped you. You're a total stranger. I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
All right, I will. Thank you.
Okay. All right, you're very welcome, Randy. God bless. Have a good day. And I got to tell you where the chocolate chip strip is. It's none other than in the San Fernando Valley at a bakery on Reseda Boulevard called Bees, B-E-A, Chocolate Chip Strip. You're going to fall into the same trap that my father used to fall into when it came to buying chocolate things like this, whether they're a babka, a racetrack, a chocolate chip strip. My father would leave in the cardboard box a beautiful knife. He didn't put the knife in the sink. He didn't put it back in the knife drawer. He kept that knife in the cardboard box with the babka and with the chocolate chip strip. You know why? Because my father used to be obsessed. He was a carpenter, right? Measure twice, cut once. He used to be obsessed with making sure that the slice that he carved out of the babka or the chocolate chip strip was as even as it could be. So he would spend all week taking that knife, and I'd watch him take a little sliver and a little sliver more. And I'd go, Dad, what are you doing? He goes, Robbie, I got to make the cut as even as possible. So he would make it, I'm convinced, intentionally uneven just so he could even it and eat more and more of whatever was in that cardboard box. And remember what I told you. The best thing about that chocolate babka or chocolate chip strip that's in the box is that whatever day you buy it, in his case, he always bought it on Sunday. And he would, listen, we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up. So he'd save that cake the whole week. And by the time it got to Thursday, that cardboard box had more moisture than the damn cake that was inside the box. It was like a hockey puck. It was like a piece of wood. But this is how you think when you're poor, when you don't have a lot of money. I'd say, Dad, how could you eat that cake? It's like a rock. And he'd say, Robbie, now it's the best time to eat the babka, the chocolate chip strip. I go, how could it be the best time? You're going to crack your tooth on the thing. It's so stale. He goes, no. Take a cup of coffee. Put 3 scoops of sugar in it. Put some milk in that cup of coffee so that it's coffee milk. Sit down at the table and take that knife and take a slice of that chocolate chip strip that's rock hard and stale. My mouth is watering already. And you dip that slice of solid rock stale cake into that coffee and you let it sit for 10 seconds. You then put that in your mouth where the coffee and the milk and the sugar has embedded itself into that stale. And it only works if it's stale. It don't work when it's fresh. And you take a bite of that coffee-drenched chocolate cake. It melts in your mouth, and it's like a whole nother life that cake gets to have. It's one of the greatest experiences. I intentionally don't eat the cake so fast. And I get extra big slices or big pieces of the cake because I want it to turn stale. I want to attack it on Thursday and Friday, just like my father used to. So I gave you two great food items this week. You're going to go to Smart and Final, and you're going to get the Nathan's hot dog. You're going to go to Ralph's and get the Schwartz Bakery challah. You're going to go to Uncle Bernie's and get the mustard. And for dessert, you're going to go to Bee's Bakery and get the chocolate chip strip. Let's talk about next week. Next week, my guest is going to be Nick LaPorchio and Nathan Feinstein from my favorite reggae group, Iaterra, Iaterra. We adopted this group a few years ago, Steve Paletta and I. We've had them in the studio a couple of times. They're now, with the pandemic, they're home writing songs. But they've become one of the biggest bands in reggae. Some of the biggest concerts. They're running around the country. Well, there's no more concerts right now, so they're home writing songs. And I really want to check in with those guys now that they're big and now that they're famous. And I asked Nick LaPorchio, what have you learned being a rock band that's now not at the beginning, but at the height of your career? What's different now? And he said, I've appreciated what the word kindness means. As an artist, that's what you want to do with your life, to be more kind to people. So I started to think about, what am I going to talk about next week? Kindness in art when you become successful. Kindness in sports. And wait till you hear the sound bites I have from behind the scenes of what Shaquille O'Neal has done in Newark, New Jersey, where he grew up. What Herb Alpert from the Tijuana Brass has done for a music school in Harlem. Yes, in sports, in art, and in surgery. It's the kindness with your life that ultimately is what you want to do with that success that you've been blessed with. That's what we're going to talk about next week. Until then, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying, which we do every Saturday. Thanks for telling your friends, and thanks for tuning in all these years, almost 10 years now. Until next week, I'll see you on the radio.
Nel cielo infinito volare, oh, cantare, oh, nel blu dipinto di blu felice.